Welcome to What the Health, a podcast where we explore the key health issues that are often dismissed. I'm James Jensen, a functional medical practitioner and owner of Hella Health, a holistic clinic focused on treating the root cause of issues rather than the symptoms, by connecting the dots and giving you practical and evidence-based solutions.
And I'm Julie Johnston, one of James's clients, and I also happen to be his PR consultant who, let's be honest, basically strong-armed him into doing this podcast.
So if you've been going around in circles, feeling dismissed and not getting the results you deserve, then you're in the right place.
Because as you always say, James, just because something is common doesn't mean it's normal.
Exactly. So let's drill down to what's really going on.
Welcome back to What the Health. Now this season, we're excited to introduce you to some of the incredible health professionals who share James's holistic approach to treating patients and getting to the root cause of issues. So today we're diving deep into the world of fertility. So James, can you do us the honours and introduce today's special guest to our audience?
Sure. So today we're talking to fertility coach Elle Duggan from eClarity Fertility Coaching. Elle specialises in emotional support and mindset during fertility journeys. As a fertility and pregnancy coach, Elle is on a mission to empower women on their journey to parenthood.
And Elle also coincidentally shares an office down the hallway from you, part of the health hub that you're creating here. So Elle, it's great to have you here. Thank you for joining us. Would you be able to start by sharing a bit about what your day-to-day looks like and what inspired you to get into fertility coaching?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to just come in today and speak to the audience about this topic, something that I'm super passionate about now. You know, 6 years ago, I found myself sitting across from James in the client chair, and it was a position that I'd never thought I would be in. And since that time, fertility has just become my entire life. For the first 3 years of that time, we were going through our own infertility journey. So we were trying to find our way to our little baby who we now have and who is now 2.5 years old, which is just amazing. And I'm so grateful for every single day. But it was an experience that I just lost myself in. You know, it was just this experience that unless you've been through it, you really don't understand the toll that it takes on everything, on every element of your life. And it can be something that's really confronting. But for me, it really did feel like a massive detour in my life. And it's only now that I can kind of appreciate that it was a direction that's been a really big upgrade, because it's enabled me to now find my purpose and now create my business, which is all about just really creating that shining beacon of light for women who are, and couples who are wanting to start a family. It's just not really happening, and it feels like an experience that might make or break them. And as I said, for me, it was an experience that really broke me. So that's what's brought me to where I am today, where I work every single day with women and couples who are, you know, in the thick of it. They might be early on in their journey. They might be further along. They might be working with a fertility specialist. They might have unexplained infertility. They might be just really struggling with the ups and downs, the roller coaster that the whole experience can be. And so, yeah, my day to day is just providing a model of support that just wasn't available when I was going through it. And that's something that I really wanted to create as a way of, you know, I think it's partly also healing myself still as well, and just being able to give that back and provide that service when I know that it was just something that I desperately wanted when I was going through it.
Yeah, and we know it can be such a financially and emotionally draining process for people. It really does affect every aspect of their life. And so you're available for appointments, in-person consultations and online as well, is that right?
I am, yeah, definitely. So when I first started out, because I am so passionate about this topic and I did all the things I needed to do to upskill and build on my psychology background to kind of expand into this space, I was working from home between my little ones' nap times and after hours and things like that. But now I'm so privileged to have this beautiful space here in the Health Hub with James and the other practitioners here. So people can come in if they're Townsville based and we can have a face-to-face consultation. Or I do offer online as well. And so I see people all over the country.
Yeah, amazing. So tell us, what are some of the things you're seeing in clinic? You know, some of the issues that might be facing couples and the symptoms they're experiencing. Tell us what that looks like.
Yeah, look, I tend to see people once they've got to the point where they're just confused and they don't know what to do. next. They might be really feeling as though their mental health has taken a hit through the experience. They might be feeling as though they're kind of in danger of becoming really fixated on this part of their life. And the result that that is having is that they're kind of withdrawing and almost isolating themselves from their lives. They feel like they're living in limbo. They're not sure if they're ever going to have this outcome that they're desperately working towards. And that can just bring all sorts of things with it. And so, you know, I'm working with a lot of couples who are sadly experiencing relationship breakdown because of the pressure and the strain that this kind of experience can have. You know, they're couples that are constantly and women that are constantly in this fight or flight mode internally, and they're just not sure what to do next. And so they're trying everything, but they're feeling as though they're losing themselves in the process. Mm. And so that confusion, that confrontation, that internal narrative can become quite stifling. It can become really consuming.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what are some of the conditions that are perhaps making it difficult for women to conceive?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. There's a lot to it, and it's one of those funny things in life. Like, you know, going through life, we all know the things that we should be doing for health in general. And then we get to something, or we get to that phase in our life where we decide it's a great time to start a family, and all of those things are the things that we need for fertility. But then you also have the underlying conditions like PCOS or endometriosis. You know, you might have things like a separation in the uterus, like physical ailments, medical conditions that can really be complicating the entire process. And then there's just kind of this level of expectation that if you just relax, it's going to be easy, you know. And so it's kind of like there's still a bit of a stigma around it, I think, and to what can be causing it. You know, if you talk about what you're going through, a lot of people just say just to relax, but not really understanding that there can actually be medical conditions underlying it, which are making it really difficult. And so I think, you know, things like just experiencing PCOS, like a lot of the time that's usually picked up earlier on. So probably before the point that you've got into your life and you're ready to start a family, you probably are aware or suspect that you have PCOS. And, you know, there's obviously physical presentations of a condition like that, but there's also the mental and emotional toll that has, you know, not feeling as though you're really connected and trusting of your body and what it's doing and what it's able to do, kind of questioning yourself in that regard. You know, all of the mood swings, the anxiety, the depression rates that come with a condition like that as well. Mm. It all kind of is connected.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, James, you sometimes refer to it as, you know, taking off some of those handbrakes that might be holding, you know, causing complications for a woman to conceive. What are some of those handbrakes that you sometimes see in clinic and some of those changes you're able to make to help it make it easier for a woman to conceive?
Yeah, well, certainly I think on the topic of, I guess, mental health around fertility, you know, when you're talking to a patient that's, you know, obviously been trying for some time and they're sort of at their wit's end, the emotional toll that's put on them already and, you know, feeling of failure and all those things, it's pretty profound. And I think that actually has like a, you know, a biochemical impact on their ability to conceive as well. And, you know, often people will be told things like, you know, just relax and it'll happen, just, you know, so, you know, and that's almost like, you know, saying don't care about the most important thing to you in your life right now. And it becomes quite obsessive. And, you know, when you talk about things like, you know, tracking ovulation and then all the things that you do around it, it really adds on top of that mental toll. And I think that's what's great about having someone like Elle who can handle that mental health side of it, because I do believe that, you know, stress and those things that come around with infertility, it like definitely impairs fertility, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And I just think about it in a simple way, you know, you need a lot of things to line up to conceive. And if your body is in this frightened, panicked state, it's kind of saying, you know, is my body ready to have a baby? And the you know, if you're feeling like that, the body's less likely to. It's like, well, actually, I don't think now's a good time to have a baby, because you're stressed out of your brain and you're not sleeping and you're, you know, hyper-tracking everything. And, you know, like you said, it could be relationship issues. So it's definitely a difficult time. And then, you know, in answering your question a bit further, I think there's a lot of simple things that can be done that often get overlooked when it comes to fertility. You know, even just like basic testing of nutrients that doesn't get looked at. You know, there'll be the usual sort of, I guess, like screening for, you know, sexually transmitted diseases and things like that. And they'll check basics, maybe like folate levels, But there's so much more to it, you know, even just understanding like the importance of vitamin D, like couples, you know, both the, you know, the male partner and the female partner need to have vitamin D levels over 100 nanomoles per liter, and that never gets checked in basic screening. So a lot of the times it can be really simple, you know, things that can be done and looked at that just often don't get looked at.
And I think you mentioned a really important point there in terms of looking at the male as well, because it takes two to make a baby. And we often talk about the things that may be, you know, making it difficult for the female to conceive. But certainly, James, that's one of the things that you really take a look at as well in terms of, you know, some of the things that fly under the radar for men. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so it's, I guess it's been, well, what I would say is fairly well documented now that there's been a massive decline in sperm health over the years. And that obviously has a big impact. Very, very rarely as part of initial screening for fertility or infertility is, you know, doing things like checking sperm quality. So again, simple things, you know, that we would look at from that point of view, you know, smoking, drinking, all those poor lifestyle choices definitely do affect sperm quality. But it's very tricky, you know, to check that sort of stuff in terms of, you know, if you're a female and you're like not ovulating, so if you're not having a period or your period's heavy or painful, you're getting that report card every single month, you know, or, you know, all the time as to how your, I guess, hormonal health is. And from a male's point of view, it's not like they can just look at their sperm and go, yep, she's right, mate. So it's really something that needs to be looked at, and it, you know, it is 50% of the deal. And a lot of people don't realize that once, you know, once I guess conception has occurred, the egg will actually go and fix any damage with the sperm. So the more, I guess, well, the better quality the sperm is, the, you know, the better quality that you know, male is bringing to the party, it's less problematic for the egg to then fix up. So long story short, the more damage the sperm has, the more effort the egg has to go through to fix that.
Wow.
So that, you know, it's really up to men to bring the best quality sperm, because it does take a lot of burden off the female. Again, around this context where it's all like, oh, I've done my bit, it's all up to her now. But yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, even investigations now in terms of the microbiome, so the actual bug balance of the sperm and things like that as well, that, you know, the fluid that the sperm's surrounded in and the interactions that has with the vaginal microbiome. So it really is up to us guys to make sure we're as fit and healthy as we can be, and not be so dismissive about, you know, the impact that things like smoking and drinking and, you know, not looking after yourself in terms of like sleep quality and eating well, because they do make a massive difference. And again, it's not often looked at. We sort of just go, yep, I've done my bit and it's up to you now.
Yeah. And is that something that you're both finding, that, you know, typically is it the woman who kind of comes to you first and you're often then having to bring the man along for the journey?
Yep, definitely. Something I would see, yeah.
Yeah, how about you, Elle?
Definitely for me as well. And I feel like it's probably, there's a little bit more willingness for the woman who wants to become a mother, who is going to carry this baby, to really dive into the research and just see what is available, what else she could be doing. Because I feel, and I don't know if you see this as well, James, but often prior to fertility tests, where you kind of have a little bit more information about what's going on, it's usually shouldered by the mum to be as to, you know, why this isn't happening. And she tends to really internalize the state of things, how things are going or not going, and she begins to focus on what she wants but doesn't yet have. And so I feel like that's the point where we start to dive in. I know myself, that's exactly what happened. I just felt like, okay, well, you know, my body's not doing what it's designed to do, like what I was put on this earth to do. So I'm going to dive in and try and find what it was, or what's happening, what I can do physically through what I'm eating, through my lifestyle, whatever it is, to go through and make those changes. And I think it's important to bring your partner along on the journey as well, because particularly in terms of sperm quality, things that we can do in terms of diet and lifestyle can make changes to sperm quality a lot faster than they make changes to egg quality. And so there's a lot more characteristics that we can test for in sperm quality, like we could check for their count, their function, you know, their health, their vitality, all of those sorts of things, you know, how many are likely to survive. But egg quality is something that you can't really test for unless you go through an egg retrieval process. You see if that egg is then going to be fertilized, and then you can perform a genetic test on an embryo. So it's a lot more difficult, and we know that changes to egg quality over time can definitely happen, but they take more like 120 days versus sperm quality can be improved a little bit quicker.
Yeah, right. And Elle, as a fertility coach and obviously backed with the psychology, what is your advice when you have women whose partner may not be quite ready to come along for the ride of, you know, looking into what's going on with any fertility issues they may be having? What advice do you give to women of how to bring their partner along for the ride with this?
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, I feel like most of the time, it's not that they're not willing to come along for the ride. It's that they're a little bit more, let's say, optimistic about the process. They're a little bit more trusting of timing, of the universe, that it will just happen when it's meant to happen, like that kind of mentality around it. And so it's more being able to find the balance between, you know, yourself, the woman who might be diving into the research, who might be becoming really almost insecure about this thing that's not happening, that they really want for themselves as a couple to be able to create a family together. And so it's about trying to find that balance, because often, you know, you even meet that resistance with your partner that you're just diving into it too much, or you're becoming, you know, it's you're living your life in limbo too much. And so it's really just being able to communicate, well, actually, this is what it feels like for me every single day. You know, like I go about my life, but I don't stop thinking about it. You know, I see prams, I see babies, I see pregnant women, I see, you know, in the workplace, other women taking time off because their children is unwell, or they're going on maternity leave. So there's baby showers, there's pregnancy announcements. All of those sorts of things become triggers when you're really deeply invested, like the woman normally is, or can become, certainly. And those sorts of things aren't quite as obvious to the males going through the journey as well. So it's just something that's, you know, it's really important to have that level of dialogue, that trusted, open, free-flowing dialogue where you can just have that really real and raw conversation about what's happening inside your mind. And when you see those sorts of things, being able to explain to your partner, you know, for you, you might just see a pregnancy announcement and you think, oh, that's cool, they're going to have a baby. But for me, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm happy for them, but I feel guilty because my first feeling was it hurts.
Yep.
It hurts to have that reminder. And so it's just communication and just keeping it free-flowing.
And, of course, we also live in a society where there's lots of well-meaning or nosy friends, neighbours, colleagues, and, you know, at the family wedding, everyone's saying, oh, when are you having a baby? It must be your turn next. You know, and that adds to the challenge, doesn't it?
Absolutely, because then it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? Because if you brush it off and you kind of say, oh, you know, I'm focusing on my career, which so often that's what we tend to lean on to say in those situations, you know, it's sort of, you feel as though you kind of painted a picture in their eyes that isn't entirely true, and it kind of puts you off a little bit yourself. But then if you go in and actually tell them what's happening as well, you're kind of invalidated by their response, and it's not anything nasty, and it's not that their response has any shortfalls or anything like that. They just probably don't have the in-depth personal experience to know exactly what it's like to know how to respond, instead of, you know, potentially just listening and saying, I can't imagine what that would be for you. You know, is there anything that I can, you know, do you need someone to listen? Is there something I can do to help in this and to help to support you? Because that's all they can really do. You tend to be brushed off with responses like, oh, you know, it'll just happen when you relax, or, you know, oh, my daughter or my friend's daughter just gets pregnant when her husband looks at her, and, you know, those sorts of comments. And you're sort of just left reeling, going, those comments actually really hurt, but I don't know how to tell you that, because it's just not the level of conversation that I know, you know, like we know each other at a different level. It's kind of an uncomfortable topic to be talking about anyway. I mean, how many other people have to talk about their sex life essentially so openly? So, yeah.
Absolutely. And just touching on again, you know, with men, are we still fighting, you know, in this day and age, is there still a stigma with men of feeling that there's shame associated if they have a low sperm count or their sperm's not healthy? Is that something you're seeing in clinic, James?
Yeah, definitely. I think when men are reluctant to get tested, I think it's usually because they're thinking, oh gosh, because I guess sperm quality is definitely, you know, associated with bravado and masculinity. So there's a lot of fear around that. And I find, like, if I'm dealing with a couple and the male's reluctant or hesitant to get any tests, I said, well, if you're such a prize bull, prove it, you know. So
bit of tough love there.
Yeah, but I think it's important because, you know, like we're talking about, it's really unfair to solely shoulder the like blame for women on blame women on it when necessarily it may not be. And just knowing how important sperm quality is, like Al pointed out, it's a lot easier and simpler to test.
Yeah.
So it's crazy not to, especially early on in the journey. And, you know, on that note with testing, quite often couples are told to wait, you know, sort of at least 6 to 12 months of trying before they'll even look at anything, which I think is crazy, because if you've got poor sperm quality, that's something you can test today and you can do something about it. So I think, yeah, it's certainly important. But, you know, with that being said, I do find that men are increasingly more supportive around doing things and supportive of their partners, which is nice to see. And I think it's great. And I think they do understand once they're explained, like how important it is. I guess they just think of it like a sperm's a sperm. And it's as simple as that, where there's a lot more, you know, like Elle touched on DNA fragmentation and, you know, things like that, that do make a big difference, that easy enough to check and find out, and just, we just need to.
Yeah, I think that's a really big takeaway from today's conversation, the fact that it is becoming quite problematic, you know, the quality of sperm and the importance of checking and the things that you can do to improve that in quite a quick time frame compared to the egg. So we touched on the testing. Can both of you tell me about what are some of the, you know, what are your favourite tests to send your couples off to do and help sort of get those results happening quicker?
I think something that James touched on just before about testing that I want to kind of highlight first and foremost is that, yes, we're sort of encouraged to wait that 12 months if we're under 35 before we receive that testing. And if we're over 35, it's about 6 months. But there's, you know, even prior to having that testing, there's so many indicators that can be picked up, and you can be making those improvements right from day one. And so I think that's where the benefit of seeing somebody like James or someone in that sort of similar field that can really look at optimal levels of everything that's going on long before you need to go to a fertility specialist, because once you do go down that path and you're you know, receiving tests for, you know, egg quantity, so, you know, an indicator of a hormone in your blood can say how many fertile years potentially you have left. Once you have that information, it's just a snapshot in time, and it kind of comes without context a lot of the time. You know, a specialist will say, you know, these are your readouts for all of these different things that we've now tested for. We've got this information, and big decisions are made based on those results. Not so much retesting to see what's being improved in the meantime by making the improvements that you can in your nutrition, in your lifestyle, in your supplementation and the nutrients that you're taking in. And so I think there's a lot of work that you can do long before, you know, because it can feel really uncomfortable waiting that 12 months when it's not happening month after month. You get to that 12th month and you're like, okay, we really want help now. And so you go to the fertility specialist. But I guess what I'm saying is there's so much more that you can do before that.
Mm. And what are some of those, I guess, nutritional changes and supplements that you recommend to couples when they're coming in, James?
Yeah, I think really simple stuff around, you know, alcohol, you know, that's definitely a fertility killer. There's no real safe or good amount of alcohol, unfortunately. despite people's advice that they receive, go on holidays, have a party, you know, those types of things. But certainly, you know, diet wise, yeah, alcohol is certainly a big one. Smoking, like ceasing smoking or vaping, is definitely another one that men in particular often will just keep going with, you know. And then in terms of, you know, just your usual sort of whole foods. So, you know, avoiding processed foods, as simple and as easy as it sounds, it is often just that. I mean, again, the more crap you eat, the more problems you're going to have. So, yeah, just like thinking about your whole foods and you know, in terms of, say, like a female has something like PCOS where she might have, you know, underlying insulin resistance, sugars and carbohydrates are really the enemy. So with something like PCOS, which is more or less, if it is related to insulin resistance, it really is lifestyle related. So if we can get the sugars down and things like dairy and often gluten, which is inflammatory as well, if we can remove those things, we're going to have much better outcomes in terms of ovulation. And, you know, in terms of some of the basic testing, you know, we've already talked about vitamin D, which is pretty well top of the tree for me, but zinc, which we've mentioned as well, is another key nutrient which never really gets tested. One thing that I often do recommend that couples get, if we're curious about things like sperm quality, or egg quality, you can check a thing called homocysteine, which gives you a bit of a rough idea around methylation. And the way it kind of works is if you're not methylating as well, in which you can sort of gather that information from testing homocysteine, gives you an idea that maybe your eggs or sperm may not be as good as they could be.
So can I just get you to clarify what's methylating?
So it's a very complicated thing, I guess, to explain, but methylation is really the donation of a methyl group to activate an enzyme. So all the little different enzyme processes all rely on methylation. So you can think of it, if methylation's not going right, it's a bit like trying to run a relay race without passing on the baton. So you can under-methylate or you can over-methylate. It's kind of, difficult to explain easily.
I think your relay with the baton explains it really well.
But it's a simple way to get an idea. So if your homocysteine is quite high, it's a sign that you're under-methylating, which then you would sort of then go, okay, what's going on? It can be as simple as, you know, testing for things like certain deficiencies like B12, or it could be, wow, I actually live a really toxic lifestyle. So, you know, say, you know, you might be like a hairdresser that's handling bleach and chemicals and colors all day, or hairsprays, or, you know, there might be some sort of explanations that might relate to that poor methylation. So, But it's multifactorial, and it's a simple way, I think, it's an easy enough test. You go, well, that's not right. I need to fix that first. Yeah.
Great. And are there any sort of, I guess, you know, words of caution about testing that you would like to let listeners know?
Yeah, definitely. I think what I was saying before around just having the context around what you're testing and why that thing is important.
Mm.
So, you know, for example, you might be testing AMH, which says, you know, fertile years, how many you've got left essentially, and it's within a range. It's just an indicator really. And the important thing to know about that, for example, is that there are identical pregnancy rates of a woman that has low AMH versus high AMH. And so it doesn't actually make a difference into the actual implementation, the conception part. That factor may come into play if you're going into IVF and doing an egg retrieval. So egg numbers may be a little bit depleted in that kind of circumstance. And so I think it's important to have the context. And same with if you come in and see somebody like James and he gives you readings and things to improve and work on, like vitamin D, zinc, those sorts of things, starts talking to you about some of the nutrients that you should be consuming and what to cut out. I think it's really important to take the information in your mind to the next level, where it's not just I'm doing these things for fertility, it's I'm doing this part so that we can, you know, vitamin D, for example, you know, how would you describe that important role if we were to take the information a level deeper?
Yeah, so I guess what you're getting at is with you know, nutrient reference ranges, they're quite broad. So what might be in normal range might not actually be optimal for fertility. Mm. So I think understanding that information certainly makes it better to like supplement if needed, or have like a few different lifestyle interventions. You know, even to go back to things like AMH, that can actually change between tests as well. Mm-hmm. So I usually would recommend if someone gets a low AMH, which strikes a lot of fear in someone, because it's like, hey, you've got like very little time left, you know, which is horrible.
Mm. And it sounds like Elle has coached through quite a few women who've panicked over that reading.
It's important to test it more than once, because you can get different results based on different conditions. You would generally need to. So say you had a test that showed a low AMH, you would definitely want to confirm that again later with a second follow-up test, because you can get random, I guess, abnormalities in those tests. So again, it's, you don't want to unnecessarily like strike fear or start a whole process with IVF thinking you've got 6 months left and, you know, it's one last bang type of thing. So
absolutely. I think it's also important, you know, just from you know, diagnostics are amazing these days. Like the information that we can find out about our bodies and what's happening in our body is really incredible. And it's information that we haven't had for a long time. It's all quite new. When you have that information, and, you know, there's young women out there like myself who were told, you know, the only way you're going to have a baby when you get to that point in your life is probably through IVF, you know, and that's based on one test result at one point in time. You know, it's just a snapshot of your life, and it's been taken from that exact point. And that becomes a belief, and that can be really damaging, because if that's the message that you're sending your body from a mind-body connection and mindset perspective, if that's the narrative that you're running constantly, and that's basically the opportunities that you think has been reduced down to such a small window of we're going to have to go through IVF, that can be really damaging. So I think that's where retesting becomes really important, because it can then work in the opposite way and reverse your confidence and bring some of that confidence back that actually there is a chance that we can do this naturally. And once people start to see that opportunity, that's when it happens. Mm. And it's really incredible.
And I guess it highlights too, you know, the fact that, you know, there are people like yourselves out there, you know, fertility coaches or, you know, people working in that holistic space of, you know, helping get your body at its best, you know, working with a health practitioner who can really support you through that journey, and that can make a huge difference as well. And Elle, I know you're really passionate about some mindfulness and stress management techniques. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about those as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I could totally geek out on this. This is my space. But it's I think it really comes down to a few really key principles. And they're things that I observe in clients right before they fall pregnant. It's sort of the point that I have in the back of my mind that we're working to. And when I see it, I know it's about to happen, and it happens, right? And so it's kind of like come down to these sorts of principles. You know, I think we talk about having a positive mindset. It's kind of like a society's, you know, go-to. I actually don't think that's the best thing to aim for. I actually think what you want to be looking for is a prepared mindset. There's a lot of anxiety that we experience through not knowing outcomes and not knowing what to expect. There's a lot of uncertainty in something like fertility. And so I think being prepared for all outcomes, all possible outcomes, knowing how you will respond to those outcomes as well, I think is key, because it just gives you this level of, it's almost like a feeling of control over what you can't control, and it's being in the driver's seat of what's happening. You know, I think there's a big shift that tends to happen when you decide and commit to no longer suffering through this experience and not letting it consume your life, not letting it control you, no longer living life in limbo, actually deciding to get back out there and bring the joy back into your life, bring the fun back, bring the socialization back, all of the things that you used to love doing. Because one of the things that a specialist will say is, you need to reduce stress. But how many other times in our life are we told, oh, you need to reduce stress? But we don't. We don't know the first thing to do to go about that. You know, we just think, oh, you know, yeah, okay, I'll try and take more time on the weekends to do less. And it's like, well, actually, there's probably an underlying theme in your life that you need to be looking at to be able to reduce it down at a baseline level. So I think that, you know, so much of your tolerances and your thresholds in life are changed through something like infertility. So just becoming really self-aware is a really big key. And being able to know that, you know, those thoughts that come to mind that start becoming really critical when you're going through something really, really challenging, those may be your default thoughts. But your follow-up thought, the second thought that comes after that first thought, can be a thought of your choice. You have control what that is. And that's something that's a really powerful technique that I use with my clients, just to start coaching them through their own internal narrative to be able to broaden their horizon a little bit. You know, you can't see the horizon when you're swimming in the middle of a rough ocean and the waves are coming up over you all the time. And so I think sometimes it's just important to have somebody there that can just give you a little bit of hope. You know, maybe it's guarded hope, maybe it's, you know, cautiously optimistic, but just being able to see the horizon and getting a little bit of perspective and course correct when you need it. And I think the other big thing is, and I talk about this a lot, it's, you know, the baby might be the goal and it might be the ideal outcome, you know, the dream, but when we're working towards our goals, sometimes they can just feel really far away and really unachievable, particularly when, you know, maybe you've had, like in our case, 36 months in a row of heartbreak, basically, mm-hmm. waiting for that positive test to come along. And so just being able to change what you're working towards into steps, give yourself those little wins along the way, see the progress, see it as a journey, not a destination that you want to get to, and keep living in the meantime. And I think that's one of the most important switches that someone can make. And then I guess the other thing is just, you know, a lot of people say, you know, how, you know, do I need to worry about alcohol? Do I need to worry about diet? Do I need to? And I often say, like, you know, obviously James has just shared that there is no level of alcohol. Mm. That's okay. And that's widely accepted and that's understood. But also if, you know, don't beat yourself up about it if you have a bad day or if you have one glass or you just, you know, you don't eat according to your meal plan. You know, it's not the end of the world. Just give yourself a little bit of grace in that and be able to know that, you know, the parent that you're going to be now through coming out the other side of this experience is vastly different to the parent that you would have been had it happened instantaneously, you know, early on in the process. And so I think just becoming aware of the things that you've gained throughout the process as well, not having that, you know, mentality necessarily that, you know, there's lessons to be learned and things like that. I think you only really see those things in hindsight when you're ready to see them. But I think just really being aware and present in the day-to-day, working through it step by step, breaking it down, making it feel a little bit more manageable and achievable.
Yeah, that's amazing advice. And James, I know, you know, we've in our previous season, we did have a bit of a chat about fertility and we'll link to the show notes, to that episode in the show notes. And we know that you do have a baby board where you mark off when couples you're working with conceive. From your point of view, the couples you've worked with, you know, can you kind of echo some of Elle's comments there and share with us that moment when they do fall pregnant?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I love getting little baby photos. Or I might see people 2 or 3 years down the track and they'll bring their baby and they'll say, oh, this is, you know, William or whoever that you helped us conceive. So it's pretty special. It's such a funny thing, like when Elle mentioned about also like not beating yourself up over little things that might, you know, you might be trying to do perfectly and then don't get so right. I mean, quite often you hear about, and you'd experience this as well, people that kind of go, screw it, I give up, this is all too hard. Then all of a sudden they have a baby, you know, or, you know, couples that might have, you know, done IVF unsuccessfully for 5 or 6 years and then finally give up and then like 6 months later, natural conception, you know. So it just really goes to show that sometimes, you know, all that effort you do put in and the stress around it that it can create can also inhibit. So I think there's a lot of value in what Elle's talking about, you know, accepting and being mindful and you know, doing, getting your mindset, I guess, as best you can around it rather than it being like a really sort of big task or job that you must sort of look at it as like a, you know, like a pass or a fail type of thing. So yeah, it's I'm glad we've had this chat. Yeah.
And Elle, you know, you're obviously a success story in yourself that you were able to conceive after, you know, some initial challenges. And I think your advice for preparedness is great because it's not always going to be the outcome that a couple might be looking for. But, you know, certainly you've had some amazing success stories with your clients as well. Can you talk to us, what's it like for you on that other side hearing from those clients when they conceive?
Oh, it's just the most emotional moment for everyone involved, and I get emotional talking about it. I guess I become really invested in my clients' journeys because it is something that is so personal to them, and it really does feel like a make or break, as I said in the beginning. And, you know, receiving that message, it's usually on a pregnancy confirmation day, a HCG test or, you know, a blood test. I've been to the doctor for the confirmation, or I'll get the photos of the positive pregnancy test and we do a little dance together, and it's just the most beautiful moment. But also, I guess, in the reality is, in those moments for a lot of couples, that isn't a moment that gives a lot of confidence depending on what they've been through as well. And so, you know, it's being able to take that win, and I really encourage people to soak up that moment and how it feels, the magic that's in that moment, because that's going to carry you through. And it's important for your body to remember those sorts of experiences. If it has been challenging, knowing what it feels like, that's something that you can hold on to, is that little glimmer of hope, knowing that it can happen. And maybe you just need a little bit of support along the way to narrow down exactly what the key ingredients are or what the levels are that we need to tweak or what we need to focus on to make it really happen.
Amazing. Look, I think there's been some absolute gold shared here today, and I think also really highlighting the value of working with a health professional throughout a fertility journey. And, you know, like you said, that preparedness of having them there to support you whichever way, you know, the outcome goes. So Elle, can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you if they would like to work with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you are Townsville-based, I would love to see you here in Hello Health, and that would just be fantastic. But if not, you can – well, and also I guess you can find me on Instagram. So my Instagram handle is at @aclarity_fertilitycoaching, or my website is aclaritycoaching as well.
Fantastic. Thank you, Elle. It's been an absolute pleasure having you join us here today and really helping connect those, extra dots between that extra coaching support and psychology that really complements that journey of what James works with clients in those nutritional changes and supplements and advice that he can give there. So thank you for joining us today. And
thanks so much for having me.
Cool. Thanks, Elle. We hope you enjoyed this episode of What the Health. If you want to keep hearing more, follow us on the Apple Podcast app, where you'll be notified every week when we drop a new episode.
And if you love the show and want to support us, feel free to share this podcast with your friends and family, or go and leave us a review.
Yes, please help us make Julie's life easier when she's trying to market this podcast.
Of course, it would be remiss of me not to mention that you can go book a consultation in person or online with James to discuss all your health concerns. Head on over to www.hellohealth.au. Plus, you'll get free postage on any products you purchase.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.